Oh, yes. Did you have much contact with parliamentarians working here? I'm talking about other not the minister, but the other parliamentarians.
Only if there was an issue of relevance to both portfolios. Obviously, sometimes you'd see them in the corridors, but people were normally in a hurry, so you didn't stop and talk. So, yes, we saw them, but we didn't have a great deal to do with them because they're all very busy with their own portfolios. I think Neil Blewett probably had more to do with them because of his membership of cabinet and the way that cabinet worked in those days.
So you didn't have much in the way of called professional contact or relationship with any other members of parliament, really.
With the backbenchers, we would liaise with the backbenchers, yes, because a lot of them took a very active interest in health policy, and obviously, shortly after the implementation of Medicare, they were very keen to promote that to their electorates, and so. And there was an active caucus committee and a parliamentary committee on health, so we would see them. Yes, we would certainly see the backbenchers.
Were there any of the parliamentarians that you did have dealings with that you particularly admired and or respected as individuals or as parliamentary operators?
Yes, there was a lot of parliamentarians I respected. In fact, I respect most parliamentarians. Unlike the majority of the population, I think they don't see how hard the parliamentarians work, how dedicated they are, how much work they do for their constituencies, and that most of the time are not out there boofing each other. They're actually working collaboratively and getting things done. So I have a lot of respect for parliamentarians.
So the one when there's none that stand out particularly.
The ones that stand out for me because of my areas of interest, I guess, were obviously Neil, John Button, who I worked with on the ALP Committee of Inquiry, Hawke and Hayden, obviously, both very good parliament, well, very good leaders, very good members of parliament, very dedicated to the public interest. Susan Ryan was very influential for me. She was very, very encouraging of things that I was doing, and I thought the work that she did was stunning. I mean, in terms of advancing women's causes, was extraordinary. John Dawkins was somebody I admired. I thought he perhaps became too much of an economic rationalist as years went by. Peter Walsh, I admired. Didn't always agree with him, but I admired him. Paul Keating, Graham Richardson. I know it's not fashionable to say that, but he was a good minister. He worked hard. I'd worked with him in the party, and I always knew what he would do. He would tell you if he disagreed with you, and he would tell you if he would support you. There were a lot of backbenchers, Senator Pat Giles, Senator Rosemary Crowley, who worked enormously hard in their own states. Certainly, some of the people in the marginal seats that I worked with were very good. I mean, there were just too many to name.
On the other side of the coin, were there any parliamentarians that you came up with not to admire or respect?
There were a few. I'm not going to name them, but there were a few. Yes, there were a few who were perhaps womanizers and who paid me a little too much attention at times. But they were very much in the minority of the ones I knew, and obviously I didn't know. I knew the Labour Party people. I didn't know many of the Liberal Party people. But mostly they were very good, very hardworking, good to work with.
What was your relationship with members of the press, if any?
Oh yes, we the journalists would come into the office, particularly in the old Parliament House where we were so close to them, and you would see them around the place. I knew a lot of them from my days with the working with the Labour Party when I would organise the national conferences and the national campaign launches. I would then have had to have worked very closely with most members of the press gallery, so I knew many of them when I worked up here. They would come into the office if there was an issue in health policy that they wanted to cover. Just another, you know, another person you knew in Parliament House, really.
Mm. Did you think the press gallery was generally fair and unbiased?
Yes, generally speaking. I think back in those days they were fair and unbiased, and they probably had more resources at their disposal to help them with their job, so they were actually more thorough in their reporting. They were pretty good.
I detect that you have a slightly different view of the press these days.
I have a different view of some of the press. I think there are still some very, very good people in the press gallery. And in fact, I was watching a part of Laurie Oakes' Andrew Olley lecture the other night and taking note of what he'd said. And, you know, really things haven't changed that much. The press today is not that much different. I think obviously there's more immediacy for coverage, which leads to shallower reporting. But there are some very good new younger journalists coming through the ranks.
Were there any journalists that you stand out as ones you really admire?
Oh, Laurie Oakes, undoubtedly. I'd known Laurie for quite a long time because he was a good friend of David Coombs. Michelle Grattan, I mean, she's a great... She's just been a great survivor of the gallery and a great leader of the gallery. Nowadays, Annabelle Crabbe, I'm a great fan of. George Megalogenis, I admire. There's any number of them. Again, probably too many to talk about, to name, and they don't immediately come to mind. But, yes, there have been some great, great reporters in the gallery.
In your days in working within the Parliament, and were there any that you, I suppose, didn't admire or didn't respect?
There were a few. Again, I'm not going to name them because they're still there. I think some of them were either biased or lazy, but mostly I found journalists quite good to work with or to liaise with, and would usually give you a fair hearing.
So you felt that from working within the minister got a fair hearing for what he wanted to say in terms of that the views were correctly expressed or taken on board by them?
Yes, by and large. And obviously we had very good press secretaries in our office who would make sure that the journalists were well briefed and would liaise with them. So my job wasn't to liaise with the journalists, but I just happened to know a lot of them.
That brings me to the point, but in which way did work practices and I suppose the atmosphere change when you moved from Old Parliament House to the Australian Parliament House? You had much more space.
We had much more space. It was perhaps communication was a bit more... One had to make more effort at communicating because you couldn't just sort of shout down the end of the room. You had to actually physically get up and walk into another office to talk to people. I think the ministers' offices became even more isolated from one another because they now had a lot of space, so we tended not to be drinking our coffee in the courtyard or visiting on those occasions when we visited another minister's office. And the ministerial wing is in Parliament House is quite huge. So I think there was more isolation both from each other and obviously isolation from the press gallery. So it really did change the whole feeling, the way we communicated, the way we related to each other. I mean, in many ways it was a big relief because we, you know, working under those conditions was extremely stressful. So it was nice to have the extra space, but the distance, the physical distance between offices and between the coffee shop and your own office was quite significant. And between the chambers was quite significant.
Did you ever, that in the same way, did you ever have any contact, any form of professional relationship or otherwise with members of the opposition while you worked in Old Parliament House and in Australian Parliament House? Or was that physical separation in a sense a reality even while you worked here?
Well, there is a separation because you normally wouldn't have a great deal to do with the opposition. However, the emergence of the AIDS virus in the mid-80s did mean the way that the government ran AIDS or developed AIDS policy meant that we tried to make it a non-party political issue and set up the Joint Parliamentary Committee on AIDS. Now, that was done before I joined the staff, but it was a very, very important vehicle for maintaining a harmonious relationship around the management of the HIV/AIDS virus. When I became Neil's senior private secretary, I did some liaison with with members of that committee. And I remember when Michael Waldridge was elected to the parliament, I think it was sometime in the late 80s, I had to go and talk to him about whether he'd be prepared to join the Joint Parliamentary Committee. We wanted him there because he obviously knew a lot about health and health policy, and his views would be critical to maintaining that policy agreement that we had developed. And so I and other members of the office would sometimes be talking to the members of the Joint Parliamentary Committee.
And did that change at all, that established relationship that had happened here? Did it change at all?
No, it didn't change. And I think it's a credit to both sides of politics that we managed the emergence of the virus in the way we did, because we are seen as a country that leads the world in the management of the virus.
How would you describe your view on politics in general terms? In the sense that, did you ever feel uncomfortable about what you were doing in a philosophical sense?
No, I don't think I did. I think by the time I joined the Labor Party, I'd made up my mind where my political views were. And I knew that one had to make compromises. I quickly realised that in order to achieve things, you needed to compromise. And so I think I was fairly comfortable in working for the Labor Party, the Labor government. I think that's where my natural home was. And I didn't feel... I just knew that you had to make compromises, and I think I'm a fairly pragmatic sort of person. So I usually accepted what needed to be done.
You say usually. Were there times when you, in a sense, struck that problem that, you know, philosophically this mightn't feel quite right? What was actually happening or what was going to happen?
I can't remember anything, to be honest. I can't. I know there would be times when I worked with the Labor Party when I'd be impatient that we weren't making more progress on things like increasing the number of women in the parliament. And I'd want to sort of have a little rant and rave about that, but I'd do that in private. and I knew that, you know, the barriers to achieving things were sometimes very real and needed to be worked through slowly. And I've always taken the view that you've got to take a long view of things if you want things to change and improve, then it takes time. And when you look back over time, you can see that those changes did happen. You know, when I look back to the early 70s, when I first became involved in the women's movement, the way that society has changed and women's role in society has changed has been enormous. But you can't see it when it's happening little tiny steps at a time. So you've always got to take that long view of change and improvement.
I suppose the answer to this one is fairly obvious, I would imagine. that were you ever required to, in a specific sense, to keep information secret, and did people try to obtain such information from you?
Oh, yes. I mean, you work for a cabinet minister, you're privy to cabinet submissions, and you are putting in cabinet submissions from the minister. And yes, obviously that happens all the time. And it happens all the time in the when you're working for the Labor Party. Journalists might want to know what your campaign tactics are, or what the election date will be, and you just don't tell them. You don't tell them. And I think I had a reputation for being able to keep secrets. I think somebody told me I had the tightest mouth in the ALP, so I've always borne that in mind. I thought, that's a reputation I want to keep. I don't gossip, and I don't leak.
Hmm. Now, you mentioned you've mentioned a number of individuals, people that you actually work, that stand out as special people that you worked with. I wonder if you could talk a bit about them as individuals and your experience of them. If I can work my way through.
Okay.
Them. You mentioned, first one is obvious, I think, Neil Blewett. Tell me about, when did you meet him first, and what was, struck you about him that was actually, I suppose, stood out?
Okay, I first met Neil when he was appointed to be co-chair of the ALP's Committee of Inquiry. I mean, standing in, he was there for Bill Hayden and Bob Hawke. And his intelligence was the first thing I noticed. He had been a professor at the university, and he was still very much a professor to me. So I was impressed by the sharpness of his mind and the directness of his questioning and his ability to analyse information. I thought he was a shy man, in that he was not easy socially, but a man of ideals, of intellect, and capacity to do things. So that's how he struck me. Not an easy man to know.
Any particular, I suppose, events, episodes, anything that in memories of? Special moment or that about him that stand out?
This is very difficult, and I don't want to go into it a great deal, but when his wife died, he was in the Canberra office, and we were with him, and that was a terribly difficult time. And a time when we got to see him at a very vulnerable stage. And, I mean, for me, it's a very difficult, a very special memory. Mm. Something that I could... It was... For me, I was pleased that I could do some little thing to help him at that time. And I saw very much the humanity of the man.
Mm.
Mm. So I don't want to go into that too much, but...
So he was, as a boss, someone to work for you. I think you have said already that he was very good... Was a good listener.
He was a good listener. He could take a brief, as I would say it, and he would think about the brief and then fire some questions, and he would always think about it, not until he was entirely comfortable would he accept that brief. So you always had to be up to the mark, and as an advisor, you always had to have thought things through, and that was very good for me. Mm. Very good for me.
Mm. Mm. Susan Ryan. You mentioned her already, briefly.
Susan was a great champion for women. She still is. She's recently taken on being the commissioner against age discrimination, and I think that's a great role for her. She really did champion the women's agenda within the Labor Party and the Labor government, and achieved a great deal. Of things like the Sex Discrimination Act, the Affirmative Action Agency, better education opportunities for women. She was a great fighter. She was a very loyal member of the Labor Party, and she's a very loyal member of the Cabinet. I think she often had a very hard time but couldn't tell us about it because of cabinet solidarity.
Mm. Did you have a personal relationship with her?
To some extent, in that I would see her socially, you know, at large social gatherings. We knew each other through the women's movement as well as through the Labour Party. Mm. And I was very fond of her. I still am fond of her, and I'm very pleased that she's still active in politics.
Mm.
We had friends in common. And a passion about women and politics.
Was this, when you mentioned through the women's movement, was this the WEL?
Yes, through the early feminist movement. Yes,
she was involved in that as well.
She was involved in that. Yes, yeah. Yes.
And what year did you join that?
That was 1972 when WEL formed, I think.
Yes.
And I joined towards the end of the year. Mm. Mm.
So in that sense, you also had dealings, you know. You
knew
her from.
I knew her before politics. Yes.
Yes.
Or before party politics.
Because you had already at that stage, I think you had joined the Labour Party?
No, I joined the Labour Party in 74 or 75.
Okay. Right. What about Mick Young?
Now, there's a difficult one. Mick was difficult. Mick was... when I first went to work for the Labour Party for David Coombe, Mick Young and David Coombe did not have a good relationship. And I had got in the middle of that in my early naive days working for David when I went over to the Parliament House. And I think I had to see Mick Young about setting up this National Committee of Inquiry. And I think what I got back from Mick was a whole lot of stuff about David, and he'd obviously saw me as David's lackey and sort of fired a whole lot of stuff off for me, which was very disconcerting for me because I was very new to this game and I never quite come across anything like this before. And so I didn't quite know what to do, and I went round to see John Button, who was co-chair of the committee and who I'd seen earlier in the day, and I told him what had happened, and he sort of basically said, "Never mind, dear, I'll fix it. You know, never you mind, I'll have a quiet word to Mick." So, you know, the start of that relationship was not good. I think it improved over the years as we saw each other at various party functions. And he was a man with a great sense of humour. And I'm probably not a friend of the women's movement in the early days, but I think he accepted the arguments later on and used to refer to us as the boiler hood, which made us all laugh. And I think as time went on, my relationship with Mick was much better. Mm. Mm. He was a man with a great sense of humour and a great wit. Mm. We miss him.
Bob Hawke.
Bob, I knew from the time I started working for the Labour Party. I think he was on the National Executive at that stage and then later became chair. Again, a man with great capacity for work, for an understanding of the issues, highly intelligent, obviously a larrikin, as we all know, loved to have a bet, would talk to the horses about me, and I knew nothing about the horses, but very good to deal with, very direct, very considered all the time. When I worked for him, there was a lot of pressure on him, but he was always, well, most of the time, quite calm, polite, doing his job. When he was the Prime Minister, I had some dealings. I have a memory of him. I had had to go to, it was the start of, we were planning the next election campaign in the party office, and he had suggested that we consider holding the campaign launch in Melbourne. And I had been sent off to Melbourne to look at a possible venue. And I came back to Canberra that night, having had quite a long day looking around Melbourne. And I had to go into the cabinet room to brief him and the campaign committee on what I'd found. And I was very, very tired. I remember being very tired and very hungry. And I went into the cabinet room in the old Parliament House. And Bob was sitting at the table with his feet up, and John Singleton was there, and there were other various men. And they were smoking cigars, and the air was full of this revolting cigar smoke. And they were not being, I think they'd also been, well, no, Bob wasn't drinking, but I think some of the others had had a few wines. And so it wasn't a very good meeting. But I just never forgotten the cigar smoke and the very masculine feel of that meeting.
But did you feel you got a hearing?
I got a hearing. I probably didn't present as well as I could have done, but I had basically thought, well, we could hold it in Melbourne, but, you know, it would be physically okay to hold it in Melbourne, but, you know, the politics that were neither here nor there. Mm. So it was a decision for people in that room who were essentially the campaign committee.
Mm.
Mm. But Bob, I thought, was a wonderful chair, a wonderful prime minister, great chair of the cabinet. He was very consultative with his ministers. He delegated well. He did all the good things a good prime minister should do.
Do you speak as if you were present?
I wasn't present in the cabinet, but I did get a feeling for how it was running.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that it was a very collaborative cabinet, in that, you know, all cabinet submissions would not just get a tick, they'd get a discussion. Mm. And that, you know, Bob Hawke's chairing skills enabled that to happen.
Mm.
So, you know, working for a minister who was accountable to, or who worked for Hawke, one got a sense of government being under control. And government being cohesive. Mm.
You mentioned both Bob and Jill won.
Yes.
She had special significance, or stories you might have about them.
Well, I knew them before I joined the Labor Party. I think Bob was probably one of the first members of Parliament I knew. I knew Jill through working at ACFOA. She was working in the office at that time, and we became good friends. And we would... I live in Weston, they lived in Duffy, which is only one suburb away. And on the weekends, our families would get together with John Kerrin and his family. And other people, other friends of Jill and Bob's, and Sunday afternoons became a regular event at their place, either around the swimming pool in the summer or around the fire in the winter. And there would be a lot of political discussion, a lot of discussion around issues. It was a very formative period for me, and I've retained a friendship with them both over the years.
Did they in any way, something you had a fairly close social relationship with them as well, did they influence your political thinking at all, do you think? Had any influence on your politics?
Well, certainly. I mean, Bob, in that he was very instrumental in getting me into a job in the Labor Party working for David Coombe. And he would often, he loved to tell stories about his time in Parliament House, and I think from him I learnt of the need to compromise, to debate. He's a great man for thinking through issues, expressing a view, debating. So from them I learnt a lot, and I got a lot of support from them both as well, and still do, even though Bob's now 80 and getting a little frail. Jill's as strong as ever.
And you mentioned David Coombe.
Yes.
I think he, from what you've said previously, that he must have had a fairly special place in your life career.
Oh, he did. He did. He was I went to work for him in 1977, never having met him until he interviewed me. And it was in the middle of the 1977 election campaign. He was very busy, and he basically threw some work at me and disappeared off to Sydney or somewhere. And so I learned very quickly that I needed to work the job out my way. He started off by treating me as a bit of a secretary, and I didn't mind that, but I wanted other things to do. I'd been working at a higher level than that. And so I would have to remind him of that I wasn't there as a secretary from time to time. But eventually he put me into working with this National Committee of Inquiry, which was a very strategically important committee for him. And so he exposed me to a lot of political debate, and because I sat in the office with him, I would be privy to all his conversations and to many of his meetings. And he learned to trust me and to trust my judgment, and I learned a hell of a lot from David. I'm always immensely grateful for what David taught me about politics. It really helped me carve out a career for myself.
Did you have a remaining contact with him throughout your years working for the Labor Party and beyond?
It was very difficult because, as you know, David had a big, not a falling out, but yes, there was some tensions between him and the Labor government. And as I was carving out a career within the party at that time, it made it very difficult to maintain contact. So we didn't basically. But in later years, we've seen each other once or twice, and I think I think I'm still very fond of David, and I think he still respects me and the choices that I made at that time. And I feel very badly about what happened to David, I think.
Are you referring to the Coombs
Ivanov affair? I think he did overstep the mark, but I think he was, the punishment that was meted out to him was too much.
Was that the point in time where you sort of, in a sense, drifted away from regular contact with him?
Yes. Yes, well, because the contact between the party and David was basically severed.
Yeah.
And that was very sad, very tough, very tough time.
Bob McMullen.
Bob McMullen was a very important figure for me again. He was the National Secretary who took over from David. He was a quiet man, fairly inscrutable at first, came from Western Australia. I had known him as the West Australian State Secretary, but I didn't know him well. I was working for him as his executive assistant for a couple of years before I became the national organiser. And that worked okay. I think probably I wasn't as close to him as I was to David. He was more secretive in a way. He was more of his own man. But eventually I became the national organiser, and so the relationship changed. And it was one where I learnt to trust Bob, I learnt to trust his instincts. He gave me a great deal of freedom. He was very, very good to work for. He was always there if you needed him. If you had a problem, you could go and sit in his office and talk it through with him. And in the end he would always say, "Now, what do you think we should do? Or what do you think you should do?" And so I'd say what I had worked out in my mind, and he'd say, or perhaps, you know, we'd discuss that a bit, and then he would always say, "Well, if that's the way you're happy to go, I'll back you. You come and help get me if you need me." And that was a tremendous reassurance, and it was a style of management that I thought was superb.
What about John Button?
Great man, John Button. Lovely sense of humour, wonderful sense of humour. He was very supportive of me when I was very new and worked for the Committee of Inquiry. supportive in the sense of just saying, it'll be all right. That's okay, you've done well, or... and just getting on with the job. And very, very intelligent, very, very, very good to work with. And a great intellect, combined with a great sense of humour, which is a lovely combination. I love that combination. Mm.
During your years working in either in Old Parliament House or in the Australian Parliament House, were there any events, special, let's say, crisis, political events that stand out as impacting on your work or life or you, or the way you thought about things?
In the Parliament House.
Well, either here or when you...
Yeah. When I first took over, or I was in the process of taking over as the senior, or the senior private secretary, there was a row in the Parliament over Neil's portfolio, in that somebody from our, or some data had been let out or been released, some Medicare data had been released that shouldn't have been released. And I can't remember the details of it at the moment. And so it was not a good way to start as the senior advisor, because there was a sense of crisis around the release of this data, and it was, you know, the issues I didn't fully understand at that stage.